are recording. We are calling the Arizona State Board of Technical Registration meeting to order. It's Tuesday, May 28th, 2019, and I have 9:03. We'll begin the meeting with roll call.
Dr. Alejandro Ingo.
Here.
Jack Gilmore.
Here.
Neil Jones.
Here.
Jason Foose.
Here.
Jason Madison.
Here.
Carmen Wyckoff. Stephen Knoll.
Here.
Andrew Everett.
Here.
Eugene Montgomery. We have a quorum.
This is Carmen here.
Is Carmen on the phone?
No.
I've attempted to call her about 3 times and she has not picked up. I left a message. So do you want me to try her again?
Yeah, please do.
That's what I said.
Yeah.
3 strikes you're out.
Boop. Boop.
Hello, this is Carmen.
Carmen, it's Kurt, and they're at the board meeting, ready to be part.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
All right.
Okay, we'll continue on to the call to the public. Members of the public may address the board during this call to the public for no more than 3 minutes, pursuant to ARS 38431.01H. The board members are not allowed to discuss or take legal action on matters raised during an open call to the public unless matters are properly noticed for discussion and legal action. However, members may ask staff to review a matter or may ask that a matter be placed on a future agenda. Is there anybody here that is not signed up to speak that would like to bring something up in the call to the public?
Am I signed up already?
Yes, you have a case and you are signed up. You would like to address the board and call to the public. Please come to the table if you can.
She's actually affiliated with the case. She's on the actual sheet.
Okay. What case?
Sorry.
What's your name?
Peggy Giller.
Okay.
D2.
Yes, you're signed up for 6D2.
Thank you.
Okay. Is there anybody else for the call to the public? Seeing or hearing nobody, I will close the call to the public. We'll move on to the adoption of minutes. Okay, item A is approve, modify, or reject the April 23rd, 2019 board meeting minutes. Has everybody had a chance to look at them? And does anybody have any comments?
Mr. Chair, I move that we accept the April 23rd, 2019 minutes, board minutes.
Second.
Chair.
We have a motion and Mr. Jones second. Any discussion on the item? Hearing none, all in favor of approving and adopting the minutes, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, minutes are approved. Okay, we'll move on to, we've got item 5 is scheduled for 9:30. A.M. So we have a few minutes here. I've got some people signed up to speak, and we've got some items on the agenda. Does any board member have any particular item they want to discuss prior to 9:30, or that we can squeeze in?
Anyone?
Is there anything that anybody wants to bring up in particular?
I got items I want to discuss, but we can go with the people that are here if that works better between now and 9:30.
Okay. The first person to sign up is a call-in. I've got 4 call-ins on this.
Oh, good Lord. Don't do those.
Okay, so we'll skip those for the time being. The next one is at 9:30. The next item, I don't have an agenda item for it. Clark Booth, are you here?
Yes, sir.
What item are you here for?
It was proposed apparently that I become part of the advisory board of enforcement.
Okay, that is
G2. Let's do that one. That one's easy.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll go to 6G2. If you would please come to the table, sir, and state your name for the record.
Clark Booth, home inspector.
Okay, and this is, the action is for approval and appointment of EAC membership. Do any of the board members have any comments or recommendations on this?
I would like to thank Mr. Booth for volunteering to help with the EAC and move that we appoint him to the committee.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion on the item? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
None opposed? We have approved Mr. Booth for appointment on EAC membership. Thank you, sir.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Do you want to do the other 6G?
Yeah, let's do 6G1 since we're there. I don't see anybody signed up for that. Does anybody have a recommendation or any comments regarding the approval of Dominic Grossi for EAC?
I move that we appoint Mr. Grossi to the EAC.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none. All in favor of approving the appointment for Dominic Grossi to EAC?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? I hear none. So motion passes. Okay, we're done with 6G.
Mr. Chair, can I make a motion to dismiss cases A1, 2, and 3? Clocus.
Yeah, you're not going to be able to do that.
I'm okay with 6A3.
Dismiss 6A3? Okay.
We have a motion to dismiss 6A3.
I'll second that, Chair.
We have a second. Any discussion on the item? Hearing none. All in favor of dismissing 6A3?
Aye.
Any opposed? Aye. Motion passes. Okay, the next person here to signed up to speak is Philip Delaney for 6B1. Good morning. You're Philip Delaney?
Yes, I am.
Okay. So we've established that for the record. Okay, this is case 6B1, and I need to find this thing. This is a case, the respondent is Jason O'Brien, land surveyor number 46473, and this case is proposed for letter of concern. Mr. Delaney, we'll let you start off the discussion here.
I had a survey done by Lion Engineering, and when I commissioned that work, I asked that he find the corners and edges of my property, although I think it's only corners. It's in the contract, but I asked for him to find the edges of my property so I could know whether or not because my landscape watering system appears to be watering the neighbor's trees, and so I wanted to know where all the edges of my property are. I bought my property about 16 months ago. The surveyors came out, they did a survey, they moved a marker in during that process, and I had some difficulties with the survey. I spoke with Lion Engineering and told them that I wanted them to come out and resurvey it. After several months, they came back out One fellow showed me some unintelligible to me information on a piece of equipment and said this is where all the points are, while another one of those guys that came out went and marked all the perfect caps on all the rebar that hadn't been capped, and that was pretty much the end of it. I spoke with the surveyor. He said that if I had another surveyor come out and survey it, and he had some difficulties or discrepancies between his survey and Lion Engineering survey, that he would consider giving me my money back. We had that survey. I can't afford to do that. I had the survey reviewed here by four other land surveyors, and they all found that that the survey did not meet the minimum standards set by the state for a survey. I feel like I paid money for something that I didn't get. If it doesn't meet the minimum standards, it doesn't, in my opinion, it doesn't make the benchmark of the minimum thing that I should have received. And I feel like when he came back out, he came back out and they went around and capped everything and showed me their equipment. It almost seemed, and then provided me a Scrivener's error. It felt like, later on, it felt like, well, and remember, it had taken months to get to that point, even, that he was not working with me at all, and not trying to be helpful, and almost seemed like he was trying to cover up his mistake. I feel like that took action on his part to do that, and in that action, I feel that when someone does something on purpose to for their own agenda, maybe, and it's wrong, that it should be a disciplinary action that is taken to protect, to make that person not do that same thing with other people, and to protect the public and all the public, whoever uses those services. Services of an engineering firm here are critical. They say where your land is. Everybody here that has a house, the engineer says where your property is. And I still never got resolution on a few things. One is that they mark the bottom of the wall, but where the neighbor's wall appears to come on my property, if you take the points and draw a straight line, however, where they marked the bottom of the wall was a curvature and would require an angle from the bottom of that wall to meet my the property corner. So that makes me feel like the neighbor's wall is on my property, and they just marked the bottom of it so there wouldn't be any problems. But he's delineating where my property is, and I don't feel like I got the minimum standard. I didn't get what I should have gotten, and I paid for it. And four surveyors here said that I didn't. They said that I didn't get the minimum standard, and Jason has not made any effort to give me my money back, as he said he would.
Sir, when you originally wanted the survey, you were trying to figure out where your sprinklers were? Were you able to ever do that out of this process?
No. I know that my sprinklers water trees that are several feet off of my property, as defined in this survey. And one of the points that I had the most concerns about, I don't really feel like the work was put in by those two people. At worst, it's incompetence. Maybe not at worst. If they just say they found something and didn't do any work to identify the property line or why my, you know, take into consideration, and the minimum standards say that the engineer will take into consideration things like a watering system that waters 5 feet onto the neighbor's property and make sure that those points are clearly defined. So, anyway, I didn't get the minimum standard for a survey. I have to have it done again. I would like this board to compel him to return my money, and I would like this board to discipline him for this entire thing. It makes an impact on all surveyors. All surveyors will be measured by the worst of them, and that's tough, but it's important that this board hold him accountable.
So the items you were interested in weren't necessarily located, they weren't drawn to your attention?
There's nothing in the record that shows that problem in any, you know, any way that was understood to be, why it was understood to be different. And he never spoke with me or discussed any of this with me.
Did you walk around the yard together?
I only walked around the yard with those two boys that came out that you know, like I said, when they moved the one marker, they said, well, that rebar needs to be over here. And I think it was a foot, you know. But I said, well, I guess that's where you put it then. Now, I didn't know. I'm not a surveyor, and this does probably speak to incompetence of the crew that came out. Is they didn't know that they shouldn't move it without making some serious notes, and that he would, well, perhaps they didn't know it, but then he still presented the survey in the recorded documents. And then 4 months later, after I had been, I guess, a big enough pain in the arse, he made a Scrivener's error, sent those guys out. He said they were going to come out and walk the property and show me those things, and all the fella did was, like I said, stand in my driveway, show me his instrument, and say, all those are what they are. They're in this piece of equipment. And while he was talking to me, the other fellow went out and apparently just marked these things 4 months later after the survey. So they could have even been moved in that period of time for all we know.
Did you receive any kind of deliverable that would indicate the positions of your items of concern?
I did get the document that was recorded with the county.
Does that show your sprinklers?
No.
Well, I have a question. I mean, you're saying that you need to have the work redone. When I read the assessment from the committee, they did found violations that he failed to, you know, tag an accepted monument, and that he failed to note that he had moved a rebar and reused it, and that he had poor communication with you. But I don't see the committee saying that the survey is incorrect. So I'm trying to understand why we think it needs to be redone.
I believe it needs to be done because those four surveyors said that the survey that was done didn't meet the minimum standard set by the state. If I buy something and it doesn't meet the minimum standard set by the state, I have to have a survey done by someone independent of that surveyor and define all those spots.
And so maybe let me rephrase. I think they're saying it doesn't meet all the regulations, but that the violations are de minimis. It means it doesn't impact the results. That, you know, he didn't follow the proper process and he had some issues, but I don't think I see that it affected the results of the survey where we located those corners. And if I'm wrong, I'd like to, you know, hear it, but I don't see that the survey is incorrect, per se, that you know, your property
so
is marked correctly.
I see it differently. I see it that I was looking to have those things identified. No one ever explained why I'm watering property that's 5 feet up off of my property, here, my trees. Nobody ever explained any of that, and I wouldn't consider that de minimis at all. I need to have my survey done again to take all those things into consideration and make sure that I'm the property line is where the property line is. There were some other things that I shared with him, and that was that a neighbor built added on a garage where it didn't really seem like there was ever any room for a garage, and I told him I wanted him to be certain that property line was never moved, and he never spoke to that either. But that was in the initial, when I initially had the work commissioned, that was in the conversation, part of why I was having my property lines drawn, so that I could see where they were.
So the proposal I see that you got from them was to flag or set property corners, which again, they had some issues, but I believe they did, prepare a record of survey, which they did late, but they did?
There was a record of survey in the packet.
Yeah.
I believe it was done in, it took some time, but
right.
it was done.
So those were the services they committed to, and if they set the corners, as you said, I mean, if you string it or you do a straight line between your corners, you should see what's within your property and what's not in your property. So I'm not excusing, you know, the communication and the issues he had with the monuments, but I don't see the survey, I don't see the EAC saying that the survey is incorrect.
So I respectfully, like I said, on the other side of my property, there's a wall that comes on, it's a curving wall, and they put markers at the bottom of it, will stake with a little thing sticking up from it, along the bottom of that wall, as though that were my property, when the property line is supposed to be a straight line from the one marker to the next. So these things, there's enough concern relative to the whole survey that make me feel like I have to have another survey done to identify all of these things, like, you know, my landscape watering, that wall, and the corners of the property again.
Chairman?
Yeah, go ahead.
Regarding the trees and the irrigation, with the survey the way it's been presented, and you draw a straight line between the two points of interest, is your irrigation on your side of the property? Or is your irrigation that just goes onto there just because it's on too hard?
No. The actual pipe.
The actual
piping system does. So regardless of what was written in that was a fairly boilerplate contract that I signed, and I kind of felt that. I felt like my words to him identified the reason for commissioning the work in the first place, and that I said those things, and that Dell, the fellow that I was working with under Jason, had understood those words and would address those issues.
But based on the survey as presented, and where you know the line is that irrigation line on your property?
Goes on that property.
So your line's on their property.
My water line that waters those trees is, given that this survey, are on that property.
And originally, you always thought it would not be, right?
I thought that was all on my property. It's consistent with a line of trees of the same type and size that they were put in by a landscaping company. So there's a pattern of trees there that now appears to be part of it is off my property.
Are those trees considered your trees?
They always have been.
Okay.
And until...
But I think what we're trying to determine is that he do the survey correctly, not whether the trees are on one property or the other. That's beyond the scope of our board. What I see is that your property is all straight lines except at the cul-de-sac, where you have a little curve, and then at the southwest corner you have another curve. And I don't know if that's where you're saying the wall is, but I can't see anything that looks out of place.
And I'm just going off memory here. I don't think they measured the curve. I don't think they showed that in the new survey. And to identify the two points of my property that were at the street, they I don't think that's in the...
Both of those are in the record of survey. They have the radius, the length, and the angle of those curves. Both of those.
Okay, again, I'm just going off of what I remember. And this has been months.
Yeah. I certainly understand
many
the confusion and how frustrating it can be if you don't know what you're getting. But I think that's one issue. And the other issue is, did he do... an accurate survey.
I think the more salient point would be, did he do a survey that met the minimum standard? Not something that would be something that we would subjectively decide was an appropriate survey. It didn't meet the state standards for the minimum standards for a survey. So it's not, in my opinion, it's not a survey. I need to have it done again. Especially for me to have confidence in it, certainly.
Okay.
Chair, Mr. Dunn, it appears that this problem precedes your purchasing the property.
I'm sorry?
It appears this problem precedes your purchasing the property. It was already existing when you bought the property. This question of where the wall is, the trees?
Yes.
It's not uncommon for landscape contractors to go out and assume they know where the property line is, and these things do happen. I'm not going to excuse it, but I'm going to say it's been my experience also that landscape installations don't always respect hard property lines. They get as close as they can, but if they don't have it surveyed or staked, these things can happen. But it appears as though the survey is correct, and you've been nice enough to water someone else's property, but it appears that now that you know where the line is, it's your choice to move the irrigation over back into your property.
I would only do that after I've done another survey that meets the minimum standards set by the state.
I think that's the question here. It appears, though, the advisory committee says it did meet minimum standard except for one violation, but it did not impact the location of those property lines. So the property lines are correct. Some of the documentation might have been in question, but the location of those property lines appear to be correct. So given that information, it appears though you could adjust your irrigation, and you have to give up the knowledge that those trees and the irrigation has been on someone else's property.
I'm just giving you my opinion. I don't feel confident in that survey. For several reasons, that while I was working with the engineering company, and indeed it took months and months to get through that, and the engineer was engineering firm was not helpful, rather unhelpful, and didn't provide anything in the way of coming out and talking to me and showing me and talking to me about what had been done. So that I understand what you're saying, and I've heard that several times, that, you know, if things are planted where people think the property line is.
Morning.
I see what you're saying. It seems, like you said, there was construction on the neighbor's house, and in addition to that, that where the property line is now, it shows my water box on their property now. So I have a lot of questions about this survey, about whether or not they've met minimum standards elsewhere, not just in the places where we've identified it. If you see where, again, I don't have any surveying knowledge, and it took me months to understand what was supposed to have been done that he didn't do, and I couldn't possibly know all the other mistakes. These are just the ones that have come up. I feel like I need to have another survey done and walk the property with the surveyor and get those things worked out and understand where my property is.
Mr. Delaney, do you own two lots?
I do.
Okay, and there's a line through the middle of your property, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Does that line intersect anything or run through anything?
Well, it is interesting that you ask that. That second lot is not in the within the original plat for the homeowners association. So that other lot lies outside the rules, if you will, for the homeowners association, and had there were points on the homeowners association line with the golf course that identify would be useful in knowing, right?
Does that middle line run through anything? Does it run through
right
structures?
Through house.
It runs through
right.
Your house.
And then.
Oh, I couldn't tell that from this survey.
Well, and that was another point too. Was when they moved that one rebar, they moved that rebar and they didn't put that in the notes. But they also put a cap on my back patio where none existed before. And I don't know if that's in the record of survey that they established,
so they,
that as a point, and that point would actually be a corner of the original homeowners association.
And that runs through your house? Through your...
Mm-hmm.
Huh. I can't tell that from this survey, so thank you for clarifying that.
It runs through a portion of my house. My house overlaps that by about 5 feet.
Are there any further questions from the board for Mr. Delaney? Mr. Delaney, do you have any additional comments?
I appreciate the time of this board to consider this. I'm sorry I've taken up so much of your day already.
We appreciate you bringing it up. Thank you. I'll open it up for board discussion now. Thank you, Mr. Delaney.
Thank you.
Chairman, I'd like to hear your thoughts. My thoughts on it are, as I said, I haven't seen anything from the EAC that said the survey is incorrect, and I respect, you know, your opinion that you want to get a new one, but you not being comfortable with it doesn't mean that it's incorrect. I definitely see a lot of issues with communication with the surveyor on top of the, issues with the two monuments that were tag later and move. But I don't see anything outside of what the EAC found. So I would, unless staff has a different recommendation, I would move that we do a letter of concern on this case to the surveyor to remind them to meet the minimum standards and to provide proper communication and information to his client.
I'll second that, Chair. We have a motion and a second, and I have some discussion.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir.
I would like to just ask if if you didn't meet minimum standards, then how can this be acceptable? I mean, we have a standard, a minimum standard, and it doesn't sound like they did it completely.
I'm not sure I can answer that thoroughly. I see two issues. I see the actual survey in the field where the things land on the ground and that's what they are, and those are facts of where they end up, and then I see reporting deficiencies. And I don't think that reporting deficiencies negate the facts on the ground. So that's kind of where it might not be the minimum standards, but that doesn't change the facts. What I don't see with this survey that was in the packet are some of the facts. For example, the house that the line runs through. I think that this property owner is entitled to know that his house is hanging over the line, albeit he owns both sides of the line. He's probably entitled to know that, and I think that's critical information for determining where the line is for people that look back at this survey and rely on this survey in the future. I don't see any notation of any block wall on this survey. I don't see anything that calls out any sprinklers, which were the whole point of the survey in the first place. I do see a note here that said, lines of occupation have not been noted on this survey. No attempt has been made to resolve lines of occupation, if any. That might be extremely abrasive with the definition of surveying. I think it's item C in the boundary minimum standards. It's either B or C that says locate things that are pertinent to the property. And I would think that structures over lines and infrastructure like the water pipes certainly would be pertinent to the property. So I'm not really comfortable with this survey as presented. I think it's missing a lot of information, and I'm inclined to agree with the alleger that not meeting the minimum standards may be something that's not serving his needs in this case. So we have a motion and we have a second, and...
Can I ask you a question,
yes,
Jason? Because I think that's relevant, and you know, maybe that changes how we do the case. My question is, the proposal for this, I mean, independent of the discussion about the sprinklers or other things, the proposal only talks about locating the property corners. Is that something that you can do, or because of the minimum standards, even if you say you're just going to locate the corners, you're still supposed to locate all the relevant features?
I think the land surveyor is obligated to point out the things that the owner would be dependent on. And I think that's part of the service. So,
but that's part of the minimum standards?
I believe it is. Yeah, it's either item B or C up in the definitions. So, you know, when we put stripes on a road, we don't do half the road, we do the whole road, right? Whether or not everybody's driving out of town or not. So, I really see this...
Unless the proposal said do half the road.
I don't think that... the proposal would override the minimum standards. I can see a proposal going out saying that we'll mark the property corners, but we don't know that these things are going to happen until we do our measurements, right? There's unforeseen things that happen after you make measurements. So I think they're certainly noteworthy and belong on a plat, and I think that's consistent with the definitions in the minimum standards. So...
Well, okay, but okay, let's say you go out to a property and they want to know one property line, neighbor dispute or something, and on the other property line, there's some, you know, there's sprinkler lines. Is the surveyor required to locate all sprinkler lines and everything else on the whole property? I mean, I think you're putting an undue burden on surveyors to work beyond their scope of services.
I guess I would question that also. It appears as though once the property line has been set, whatever encroachment or non-encroachment would be up to the two property owners to resolve, not necessarily the surveyor. It depends on what he's asked to do if he's been asked just to locate the property line and it's established, then what's actually physically there is potentially between the two property owners, I would believe.
Well, this is the document that they're going to start that resolution from. It's this.
So, but our task was that surveyor done correctly, survey done correctly, and it appears the property lines were established correctly.
I don't have anything to say that they weren't, but I have this report that doesn't reflect the conditions in the field. And a pertinent conditions, critical things. I mean, if it was the house in the middle of the lot, I wouldn't say go locate the house. There's no problem with that, right? But this house apparently is sitting close to or over these interior property lines. Apparently there was a wall that was an issue, and that came up in the EAC too. So these things that are affecting the position of the lines haven't been noticed on this survey, and I think they're very critical items in this case. If they weren't critical, if they weren't a concern, then you know maybe there isn't a reason to locate them. So
it sounds like that gets back to the letter of concern. Bring that up in letter of concern, but the survey itself was properly done.
I think Jason is saying that it goes beyond that, beyond the letter of concern. I think we need to go by the standards. But the standards say that they need to locate those features. If it does, then there's an issue. But I think the minimum standards need to say that, because otherwise, yeah, I mean, I don't think I've always seen houses and walls and things located on records of survey.
I don't think it would be a normal practice if they're not in conflict or abrasive with the lines. But when they become abrasive with the lines, it becomes an issue.
But is it a best practice or a minimum standard?
The minimum standards say appurtenances or things appurtenant.
Okay.
So.
But are we, I mean, based on what we have in our packet, do we know that the house is across the straddling the line?
It looks good.
The only information that I have in the packet is that the surveyor set a nail in a washer or a washer in a patio.
Okay.
So there's something involved there. I don't see on this survey where he set anything in a patio. I actually see a note that disclaims something, or maybe says the opposite, that he didn't locate anything relative to occupation. But I would think that it would be a normal standard of care to say that I had to set a nail in a washer in a patio on this survey and show what the patio is to preserve the position of the nail in the washer. What happens if the patio gets dumped?
Well, I was just going to say, Andy, maybe you can hop in. Standard of care issue. You have that in your discipline, right? We do an architecture. So would another registered land surveyor with that proposal do the same thing? Or would he do the minimum standards that you're requesting? You know, would another engineer do the same thing in the same locale on this?
I certainly know that I would. I would expect others to do that in the case of abrasion. Now, if these items don't impact the property lines or if the lines don't conflict with them, then it doesn't seem to be an issue. But when these items, when physical features conflict with lines, I think it's of significant importance to identify those on the survey. Maybe it's in text or maybe it's in something.
But he owns both properties. Shouldn't that plat be combined? Shouldn't that have been combined at some point? Did it say it's one property instead of having a line down the middle?
Well, that didn't happen, and as the alleger pointed out, some of this land is encumbered under the rules of an HOA, and some of it is just what you might call loose land or unencumbered land. So that boundary that runs between the two lots is significant, perhaps for whatever he wants to build or do something. He can do two different things with the property because they lie under two different conditions. Now, you know, I don't know. That's getting a little bit off course here. My point is that when the line crossed these critical items, they weren't noted on the survey.
And are those actual parcels? Because I don't see a different parcel number. I mean, it looks like it was a lot split or something that happened.
They may not be. The assessor can clump several lots together under one number, so that's not really an issue here. The issue is that the infrastructure that, well, I don't know.
But are they actually two different lots?
Yes.
Okay.
I spoke with the county.
Yes, please do.
I spoke with the county before I bought the property, and they said that it was two separate lots, and that I could have that line moved and develop that second lot. But this was prior to me purchasing the property. They said that I could do that with that. That they hadn't been put together, and that they just was two separate easements. So I do have that ability to do that as far as the county is concerned.
So what I don't see is on this survey, I don't see the abrasive infrastructure or abrasive items noted where the lines cross them, if they do. You know, that would lead me to believe that there's nothing, reading the survey, that there's nothing that touches these lines, but the alleger says different. The alleger says that, I don't know, his inspection of the points set say that. So, so that's where I'm at. We have a motion and a second.
I have no problem withdrawing my motion if we want to go differently. I only see two potential ways. One is through the letter of concern, or two, we can also send it back to the EAC or a different EAC and confirm that they feel that those, what did you call them? Not encroachments, you called them?
Abrasions.
Appurtenances?
Yeah, should be included. So let me do this. And Jack, if you're inclined, I'll withdraw my motion, and I would make a new motion that we send this case back to the EAC for evaluation.
Mr. Donald?
Dr. Angel, the motion was made and seconded. So
have we voted on?
Yeah. Got it.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second, and we had some discussion about it and some concern. So with that, we'll go on with the vote. All in favor of this motion?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Nay.
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 So I think we need to count. So
there's just two.
Two opposed. Six, two. Or two ayes.
Oh, two ayes. Okay. So the motion.
We're just loud.
Passes. Okay. You sounded good.
Motion failed.
Motion failed. I'm sorry. Motion failed. So.
Okay. So I would move. Can I make another motion?
Please
that
do.
We send the case back to the EAC. To evaluate whether the lack of showing abrasions on the parcels fails to meet the minimum standards and whether that should be corrected.
Second that, Chair.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion?
Just a question. Can we talk about the fact that you have the physical survey and the written survey? That seems where the conflict is. Will the EAC address that?
You asked me if we can talk about that?
Yeah, can you present that to EAC to really look at that?
How would we convey that information or that question to the EAC?
Specifically, what's the question? Sorry, taking a couple of notes on the case.
Well, my impression is that the survey was done correctly, but my impression also is that it wasn't reported correctly. So the EAC will come back saying, oh, the survey's done, we're fine. Well, that's only part of the problem we've discussed here.
Well, that goes with the minimum standards, doesn't it? I mean, if it's not shown correctly, it needs to be corrected. So, for instance, if the house needs to be shown on the survey, they would need to amend the record of survey or do something showing that, wouldn't they?
Maybe or maybe not. I can't say quite at this point. Okay. I don't have enough information.
Well, here's my issue with sending this back to EAC again. Obviously, it went through. It got two reviews. It, you know, one said have an EAC, the other one didn't. But they ended up having an EAC. They all sat down. You know, the alleger and respondent both were invited to be there. They made their determinations, and you know, not no one, I don't believe, stated anything about showing the house and showing the walls. I mean, they did say that the survey was minimal, but no one even brought up that point. I have a concern with resending things. I mean, so what if the next DAC comes back and says the same thing, and he comes back in here again, the alleger comes back in here again, and still doesn't agree with it? Are we going to send it back a third? I mean, are we just going to keep sending it back until he gets the answer that he wants? That's a concern I have. I mean, there's a process that we go through this. It's not like we, there not been an EAC, let's say both people that submitted, came back and said, no AC's needed, blah, blah, blah. Okay, then maybe I could say, okay, maybe we should have them, to get all the facts and look at it. But that all happened. I think we're, kind of redoing these things over and over again.
And I wish the respondent would be here, too, help clear up some stuff.
Well, and that, that's his right to be here, his right not to be here. I don't know if the EAC, I don't know who all was present at the EAC. I didn't.
He was on some.
And the two.
And was the alleger at the EAC?
Yeah.
Yes. So everyone's had their say.
Just to get it out there, I'll echo a little bit of what Jason's saying, and it goes to what you were saying, Neil. I give a lot of deference to you design professionals on the board, especially if we're in your specific discipline, like now, Jason. But I also give deference to the EAC members, and I do get concerned about the when the EAC has this kind of hearing and everyone participates, and then we second guess. Because there are professionals who all the time have different versions of what the standard of care is, you've got what you would do, and you would argue that that's standard of care. And maybe these other guys would say, I don't think that's necessary to meet the standard of care. Happens every day in my world. And so this could be very different if we got two other EAC members looking at this. But we've got two. It was heard. And I'm open to the idea that, hey, maybe they didn't think about something. And that may happen, but I just am pretty cautious about second guessing our EACs. So that's part of why I voted for your motion that you were trying to withdraw.
I agree with that.
Well said. Yeah. I'm not far off from that either.
And then, yeah, I know you're not.
The question is. Because I think, yes, we don't want to second-guess the ACs. In fact, there's a reason we have them. And so we should, they're the technical subject matter experts on this. If there is something that they didn't think of or didn't look at, I think it's fair to ask them to look at that specific scope, not to reassess the case from scratch.
But this is we're not sure if they looked at it, because they didn't specifically address it, so we don't know. But if it stands out enough for Jason.
Was Mr. Hunt at the... Mr. Hunt, yeah. Were you at the EAC and did you...
It's been a while. I haven't reviewed it.
Too many EACs and too many...
Okay. Mr. Delaney, during his interview, brought in full-size maps and they gathered around that and explained what issues he brought up very thoroughly. He brought in the same issues today. There was very little discussion about any water or irrigation during the meeting. And if there was mention about the house, I don't recall. But they explained to Mr. Delaney the issues that they saw with the reporting. And Mr. O'Brien, I think it's in the report, that he said that they found a rebar that was laying, not vertical. He said it was a different size than what the FAMA survey showed, but that he reused it anyway and put it on a survey. And they thought that was the bigger issue than the communication. Just to explain the lack of
the way, issue.
Yeah. So we have another motion and second on the table. Right?
Call the question.
I will call the question.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Nay.
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 You guys make the motion.
Thank you, Dr. Angel. I mean,
over Tuesday. Maybe it's Dr. Angel's motion. Or maybe it's Dr. Angel. No.
So, we are at, we voted on this, and that puts us at this being a letter of concern to the...
Yeah, unless someone has another option they want to throw out. I'm going to renew...
A motion needs to be made for...
I'm going to renew Dr. Engel's first motion, that we accept the board's, or accept the staff proposal to issue a letter of concern.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. I think we've discussed it enough. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Aye. Nay. So that concludes 6B1, P19-034. We've got a couple of
hearings
that we need to get to here. So we're going to jump up to item 5A. Which is review, discuss, and take possible action on the administrative law judge decision of Christopher DeFrema, application for PE registration 182949. Mr. DeFrema, thank you. And just for the record, sir, would you state your name?
Christopher DeFrema.
Thank you. Okay, is everybody ready? This is the time set for consideration of administration... Yes, I'm sorry.
It's just a wave.
Oh.
It's my morning.
Good morning, Mr. Rain. Thank you for coming. This is the time set for consideration of the administrative law judge's recommended decision. In this case, the matter regarding Christopher DeFrema. Are the parties present?
Scott Bowen for the state, Mr. Chair.
Chris DeFrema, present.
Thank you, gentlemen. Okay. As a preliminary matter, I will ask that all board members indicate that they have received and reviewed the administrative law judge decision and the record in this matter, and we will have a declaration from each member here. Kurt, if you want to do a roll call on this.
Here, I've read it. Jack Gilmore.
Yes, I've read it.
Neil Jones.
Yes, I've read it.
Jason Booth.
Yes.
Jason Madison.
Yes.
Carmen Wyckoff.
Yep.
Stephen Knoll.
Yes.
Andrew Everode.
Yes.
Okay. Everybody's familiar with the case. The board will now hear brief oral argument from the parties on the ALJ's recommended decision. Please understand that this is not the time for you to re-argue the merits of your case. Please focus on the recommended outcome and any errors you believe are contained in the recommended decision. Each party will have 5 minutes. Since the state has the burden of proof in this matter, it shall go first and be allowed to save some of its time for a brief rebuttal, then we will hear from the respondent. Mr. Donald, could I ask something of you? Could you recite the case number?
Certainly, Mr. Chair. The case is 17F-P-14-05-BTR-RES.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
And we'll hear your argument. Mr. Rain.
Mr. Chair, just for clarification on a licensing matter, the applicant bears the burden of proof. The ultimate question is whether to accept this administrative law judge's decision, but the underlying matter was an application. So Mr. Freeman should technically go first and have the opportunity to rebuttal.
Mr. Donald, do you agree with that?
Yes, Mr. Chair. carries.
Okay, well, sure. Mr. DePrima, we'll hear your arguments here.
I hope you can hear me.
And I have 10:02 on my computer.
briefly, they've all they've ignored ARS 12-2602, which states that a licensed professional engineer must be served a separate affidavit in writing and signed and sealed by the similar engineer stating whether the expert witness testimony is required to prove the case of liability against the engineer. And I've seen no documentation of this. The case shows, manners, acts, errors, or omissions which violate the standard care that's not present. For the same statute, the court must dismiss without prejudice any claims against a licensed professional engineer if the claimant fails to file and serve preliminary expert opinion affidavit. That's section F for the record. Rule 26.1, section 7, no damages reported. ASCE, American Society of Professional Engineers, they believe in certificates of merit to reduce frivolous lawsuits, and otherwise the cases must be dismissed. Okay, so let me be clear. The case against me must be dismissed. It was illegal. Must be dismissed, expunged, squashed, destroyed. I actually agreed to and signed the first consent agreement, and I was dragged into the case by an overzealous lawyer. Your overzealous lawyer. Okay. But anyways, besides all this, it is illegal. Must be dismissed. Besides all this, I do agree that I have to be engineers have to be regulated, and agree with that. That they have to be they have to protect the seal 100% all times, and they have the engineers and employees have to be bona fide, and all the work should be done in house. That's what I can heard. Okay. Also, I've submitted three certificates of experience. Have you all received those certificates of experience where I received excellent or very good ratings? So I feel I deserve to have the license to grant it to me. And, yeah, I have clients that like me, that like my work. I want to go back to work, and but like I said originally, it was just a big misunderstanding. I shouldn't have to ask for mercy, but I'm asking for mercy because the case against me has to be expunged. And I want to be regulated because I want to go back to work. I came back to fight it. I decided this is what I want to do. So if you could please grant the license. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. DePrima. We'll now go to the state's argument.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Nothing that Mr. DePrima has said really has addressed the actual denial of his license by this court. The state would ask that the board accept the administrative law judge's recommended decision in this case, ordering a denial of the appeal and denying the application. I believe the board has read and reviewed the administrative law judge's decision. I believe it does stand on its own merits. Thank you.
Okay, we've heard from the respondent, and we've heard from the state, and the state went second, so I believe that is their rebuttal period, too. Mr. Rain?
Yeah, I mean, that was the process.
Rebuttal? Yes.
The purpose of that would be to address something.
Yeah, well, Mr. Let's see, AAC R4-30-126, C, and numbers 1, 5, and 7. C1, irregularity of the case. While I signed this in the consent agreement, he decided to drag me into his system. That's the excessive or insufficient penalties. To revoke my license for without proper documentation. ARS 12-2602. No, you can't do that. You just try to bully me. Decision is unjustified based on evidence or is contrary to law. I'm sorry, it's contrary to law. But, you know, I agree to that engineers have to be regulated. So, no, it's not a fair court. That if they don't recognize the law, that it's completely illegal. And it's plain written section F. I guess I can read it to you if you don't. It has to be dismissed if there's no evidence of a written affidavit signed, sealed, and stamped and sealed by an engineer, a civil engineer. There's no expert witness. No, it's illegal. That case has to be squashed. And that's the law.
Mr. DePrima, we're not here to talk about the loss of your license. We're here to talk about your application and the decision not to grant your application. The statute you're citing, 12-2602, has to do with claims against registered professionals. You are currently not a registered professional, so that statute has nothing to do with your application.
Well, I respectfully disagree. If that case against me was illegal, it has to be squashed.
But we're not here talking about the case against you. We're talking here about your application to get licensed.
Well, I have all the credentials. The court was wrong. It's unlawful.
Is that it, Mr. DePrima?
Well, basically, I have the qualifications. I just don't see any reason it should be granted. Let's see, where are these? Has the chairman and the board, have they received these, what do you call these, expert witnesses?
Mr. DePrima, we received and reviewed your application previously, which is what led us to deny the application that then went to the hearing. So we've seen your packet, and I assume it was addressed at the hearing as well.
There's no reason not to grant the license, and you all know it. Dr. Angel even says that the consent agreement should be rewritten so I could get my license granted.
I don't believe I said that, Mr. DePrima. I apologize for correcting you, but I don't think, and I think as Mr. Everwood said, The challenge here is we are not talking about your consent agreement or your revocation. We're talking about your application and specifically the administrative law judge recommendation to deny your license or to affirm the board's denial. I'd like to hear from you if you have something to say about that.
It was an unfair trial. It was just working for the prosecutor. But very obvious to me.
Thank you, Mr. DePrima. I respect your opinion. Your 5 minutes of floor time has expired. Is there anything you have very quickly to close with?
Like I said, Mr. Donald was worried that I couldn't be regular, but I can be regular. I realize the license has to be protected under lock and key if necessary. The last job I worked at, the guy did protect his license very well, and that's what she wanted me to learn. It's a very humbling experience, but I feel I deserve the license, and I think you all know that.
Thank you, Mr. DePrima. Okay, that concludes the arguments and rebuttals. Having reviewed the administrative law judge's proposed findings of fact, conclusions of law, and order in this case, the record provided to us and the arguments from the parties, the board will now discuss its decision. This portion is closed to any further comment by the parties. So I'll open up the board's table here for discussion.
I'll make a motion to get the first step started if I could, Mr. Chair.
Please do.
All right, I move that we adopt the findings of fact as recommended by the administrative law judge.
Second.
We have a motion and a second.
Move.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes.
Mr. Chair, I'll also then move that we adopt the conclusions of law as recommended by the administrative law judge.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none.
Opposed.
Motion passes.
And then, Mr. Chair, do we need a third step to actually accept the order as well?
Yeah, I mean, essentially with these three combined, you would be accepting.
Yeah, but we've done two, right? So
I don't agree.
Mr. Chair, I'll move that we accept the decision of the administrative law judge denying the appeal.
I second that.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
I didn't understand.
Hearing none. The
Chair,
motion passes.
I'd like to make one comment to explain my vote on that last item. While I have a lot of sympathy for Mrs. DePrima, my biggest concern is that, and the judge put it very well, is that this Mr. DePrima, and he once says he wants to be regulated, but he can't accept that the prior consent agreement is binding. And Mr. DePrima, until you understand that your license has been revoked and that that's done, and there was nothing unfair about it, I don't think you're going to be able to get your license back because it doesn't demonstrate a willingness to be regulated.
Well, no, it was illegally done.
That's my advice to you, Mr. DePrima. I'd like you to get back to work, but until you understand that, you won't be able to show that you can be regulated. Thank you.
Just throw 6 years of experience away. Makes no sense.
All give us. Don't you have to say this concludes?
Yeah. So we're at the point of conclusion. This concludes the matter before the board. The board's decision will be reduced in writing and sent out to the party shortly. Further appeal rights on the board's decision will be set forth in writing in the order. Thank you all for attending today.
What do you say? Your rights will be set forth in the order that you'll get. It'll tell you.
Okay, we're moving on to item 5B, and this is the formal hearing in the matter of Victor Johnson and Justice Satellite and Security, case AL 19044.
we say again? 5B1?
5B1, yes. Okay, this is the date, time, and place where the matter dealing with Victor Johnson and Justice Satellite and Security is scheduled to be heard by the Arizona State Board of Technical Registration. For the record, the case number is AL19-004. The subject of this hearing is set forth in the complaint and notice of hearing. This is a formal administrative hearing to determine if there has been a violation of the board statutes and rules and whether disciplinary action is warranted. The board members present for this hearing will be introduced through roll call. Mr. Winter.
Alexander Angel.
Here.
Jack Gilmore.
Here.
Neil Jones.
Here.
Jason Foose.
Here.
Jason Madison.
Here.
Carmen Wyckoff.
Here.
Stephen Knoll.
Here.
Andrew Everode.
Here.
Eugene Montgomery.
Okay. The items of record. Let the record show that the board members have been furnished with copies of the complaint and notice of hearing and all pleadings of record. Appearances. Will the parties please identify themselves? First the state, then the respondent.
Scott Donald on behalf of the state. Victor Johnson, Jr.
Scott Donald on behalf of the state.
And Mr. Johnson, do you have an attorney?
No, I don't.
Okay, do you understand that you have the right to be represented by an attorney?
Yes, I do.
Do you understand that by proceeding without representation of legal counsel, you're waiving your right to such representation at this hearing?
Yes.
Of course, you may seek legal counsel in any subsequent proceedings such as an appeal. Do you understand that this hearing is your opportunity to present testimony and evidence on your behalf?
Yes.
Do you understand that should you appeal the board's decision, the record you make at this hearing today will be evidence considered by a court in determining whether the board's decision was proper?
Yes, I understand.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, can I just get clarification on what we received?
Please do.
Mr. Donald, I understand that these exhibits are all either in the packet or were part of the packet back in February. When we address the complaint?
Yes, Mr. River, I believe all of these exhibits are directly from that packet. However, furnished to the board, as we will be referring to them throughout the proceedings, they have what's called a date stamp number in the lower right corner, which should make it easy for the board members to find the way to exhibits as they're referenced.
I just want to make sure, because we'll go through around and say we've read everything. So if we read the packet and we read what we had in February, we can say yes.
Absolutely, Mr. Chair.
Okay, a hearing of this nature differs from a court proceeding. The technical rules of evidence do not apply. Reliable hearsay evidence is admissible. The board will entertain objections concerning irrelevant, repetitious, or otherwise inadmissible evidence. However, the board is the sole judge of the weight given to the evidence received. In a disciplinary proceeding, the state bears the burden of proof and shall present its case first. Then the respondent shall present its case. Each party will be allowed to present evidence and cross-examine opposing witnesses and make a closing argument. After it hears all of the evidence and the arguments of the parties, the board will deliberate and decide whether to dismiss the case or take appropriate disciplinary action. Does the state wish to make an opening statement?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chair, members of the board, good morning. This hearing to be conducted before the board this morning is a pretty simple one. It should be fairly short. There really is not a whole lot that the board is going to have to consider. The allegations against the respondent and the respondent firm essentially have to do with practicing a board-regulated profession without being licensed with the board. What the board is going to hear today is evidence from a board investigator. You're going to see documentary evidence in the form of emails, text messages, a variety of different types of documentary evidence. And essentially, it is going to overwhelmingly demonstrate that the respondent and the respondent firm did engage in these violations. Additionally, the board is going to also hear from the investigator about a variety of conversations with the respondent. And the board is going to see pretty clearly that, that the respondent appears to have been consistently trying to prove that Greek philosophy position that the only constant is change, because throughout all of his conversations with board staff, the only constant has been the story has consistently changed the material facts every single time. What you're going to hear is that the respondent has an alarm business, does not have an alarm business, has engaged in alarm business, has not engaged in alarm business, had a phone number for 15 years, it's actually his son's number, no, it's actually his number for the last 10 years. You're going to hear a variety of different stories, but at the core of it all, you're going to see overwhelming evidence that the respondent and respondent firm have engaged in the unlicensed practice.
Does the respondent wish to make an opening statement?
Yes,
this is not the time to provide your full presentation. Rather, this is the time to provide a brief summary on your position. You will have the chance to testify a little later.
Okay, I'm just saying that the firm that he's talking about and the person that he's talking about is actually my son, and all I am is a secondary character trying to take care of the business that for some reason he just left, and I found out about it and tried to take over the business and talk to the gentleman here that was in charge to see if I could continue the business, and he told me how to do it, and I didn't think what he asked me to do. I did not tell him, look, I am not Victor Johnson. All I told him was I would like to continue the business. He told me I didn't have a license, and he told me how to do it, and I followed exactly what he said to do. And now he's denying me the right to run the business. The business is not mine.
Thank you, sir. Would the state please call its first witness?
Certainly. I would like to call to the stand Board Investigator Will Williams.
The witness will be sworn. Do you solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you.
Please
state
and spell your name.
Pledge of Allegiance.
William Williams, last name is spelled W-I-L-L.
Morning prayer.
And what is your job title?
An investigator.
And with whom are you an investigator?
In the Arizona Board of Technical Education.
How long have you been an investigator
on the board? Approximately a year.
Okay. And in that time, have you found cause to refer to the statutes and rules that govern the board?
Yes.
Okay. Could you
consider yourself reasonably comfortable with it?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And did you review any files in preparation for the case here?
Yes, I did.
And would that be the file in the case that's currently being conducted?
Correct.
Now, Mr. Will, you are... thank you. First time I've released this on record. Now, Mr. Will, you conducted the investigation in this case, is that correct?
That's correct.
Now, Mr. Will, if you could just briefly explain to the court, how did you become aware of this case? How did the board become aware of it?
In February, we received a notice from the Phoenix Police Department Alarm Unit that a business may be operating unregistered, and they forwarded that over to the investigation supervisor for the board.
And when you say received an email, actually, as a preliminary matter, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Board, I would like to ask at this time that the board admit the exhibits that the state has provided.
This packet here?
Yes.
So admitted. So admitted.
Mr. Chair, you may want to ask if you respond if you have an objection before making that.
Mr. Johnson, do you have any objection to that?
No.
Thank you, sir. So admitted.
Now, Mr. Will, the communication you're talking about, if you turn to Exhibit 2 in the packet, can you identify this exhibit?
That's an email from Rebecca Buchanan of the City of Phoenix to Douglas Parlin, CTO.
And what is the substance of this email?
It is a communication that she believes the company has not been licensed by BTR but continues to conduct business. She also attached a list of customers that we believe work for Justice Security and Mr. Victor Johnson.
And this email, this list of customers attached, I counted, had over 200 subscribers. Does that appear to be accurate? And that is, if you would refer to date stamp 11, this appears to be the front page of the list provided. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And that is Justice Security Attention Victor Johnson. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
Now, Mr. Will, you asked me to testify about this. One of the reasons I did that is because you are the investigator on the case. You've actually prepared some documents or a report along the way, have you not?
Yes, I have.
Okay. And the purpose of this report would be that you would be able to pursue an investigation and, if necessary, testify. Is that correct?
Correct.
So it would be accurate to say this report contains your impressions of this case based upon the question?
Yes, it does.
Could you identify Exhibit 1 for the court?
Exhibit 1 is a report that I generated that is an update on the report that was issued to the board at its board meeting February 2019.
And this report in Exhibit 1 contains essentially the details of the investigation as it occurred, is that correct?
Yes, it's in a chronological order.
So, Mr. Will, when you received the email in Exhibit 2, what did you do?
Well, first, we tried to find out if the business was, in fact, operating and if there were any customers. I used that list provided by Phoenix and started trying to contact anyone on the list. I finally was able to contact the person who said yes, they were paying Justice Security for alarm monitoring and alarm servicing. And they provided me with a contract that they had signed and a monitoring agreement that they had just paid.
Okay. And before we go too long down that, path, on your report, your details of investigation, you indicated you attempted to contact the respondent, is that correct?
Yes, he was one of my first calls.
And how did that first call go?
The phone call was answered. It was a cell phone, and I asked to speak to Victor Johnson. The person who answered said I was not talking to Victor Johnson, but that he knew him, and he ended the call with that.
Did you attempt to call him at that number again?
I called that exact same number another day and spoke to the same person I had spoken to earlier, and this time he identified himself as Victor Johnson.
And what did Mr. Johnson say to you when you called him?
He had told me that the alarm business was closed, no longer operating, and that he was not operating the alarm company. I did ask him to meet with us down here at the board office.
And Mr. Will, if I could, and perhaps I jumped ahead of myself here, but if you could back up to November 6th,
right,
when you spoke with him, he did indicate that he had been operating the alarm business, is that correct?
Correct. When he met here at the office in the lobby, he informed me that he wasn't operating the alarm business for the last 6 months unregistered.
So at that point, Mr. Johnson was alleging that he was operating an alarm business and it was unregistered, is that correct?
Correct.
Now, on that same date, on November 6th, so he indicated to you that they didn't have a physical location, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. How did Mr. Johnson indicate that he got business?
He specifically said he got his customers through word of mouth.
Now, Mr. Will, you indicated that you located and spoke to a client from the list from the police department, is that correct?
Yes, I did.
And when you spoke to that person, how did they characterize their involvement with Mr. Johnson's company?
They said they had used him for alarm monitoring, and they had in fact just paid a bill for it and provided him with that invoice.
Mr. Will, you turn to Exhibit 4, please, page stamp 23. Can you identify this document?
That is the monitoring agreement contract invoice that was given to me by the client.
And just for reference, there are parts of this document that have been redacted. Is that for the protection of the client's name?
Yes, sir.
So, Mr. Will, at the top of this document in the upper left, there is a business name and address. Can you please read that report?
Justice Center and Security.
And then there's a P.O. box, isn't there?
P.O. box 598 in Collinson.
And this invoice is dated, I'm sorry, can you read the date?
The invoice date is October 1, 2018.
As of October 1, 2018, this client was receiving a bill from Justice Satellite Security. Is that correct?
Yes.
Now, so if you turn to Exhibit 5, date stamp 25, you identify this document.
That was a statement provided by the same client.
And what is the date on this statement?
October 14 of 2010.
And what is the company on the left of this statement?
There's a pre-printed logo that says Justice Security.
And this is the same client as the client who provided the bill in Exhibit 4, is that correct?
That's correct.
Now, the client provided another document as well, is that correct?
Yes.
And Exhibit 6, we have this document, we have this.
It's an agreement for alarm installation.
And again, the client name has been redacted and the client address has been redacted, is that correct?
Correct.
Mr. Will, have you seen the redacted versions of this document?
Yes, I have.
And Mr. Will, can you testify that in fact this is the same client name and address as on the other two documents?
Yes, it is.
Well, in terms of ASAC 31, this is a, can you please describe to the board what this document is?
It's a City of Phoenix alarm subscriber permit application.
And this is again from the same client?
Yes, sir.
If you look down to about halfway down, alarm company and or monitoring company installed, serviced by, who is this serviced by?
It says Justice Security.
Now, it does say this is monitored by cops, does it not?
Yes, it does.
Could you explain to the board, what is COPS?
As I came to find out, COPS is a subsidiary of a registered company named Lydia Security.
Now, at the time you first saw this document, did you have any idea why there would be an entity called COPS on the...
I have no idea.
So, Mr. Will, you just mentioned a company called Lydia Security.
Yes.
Have you had any contact with a company named Lydia Security?
I spoke several times to the responsible person for the business.
And could you tell me what you spoke to them about?
I had asked the responsible person if they were doing any business with a company named Justice Security, and they indicated they were.
And did they tell you what the nature of that business was?
They said they operate as a third-party dealer for World Alarm Monitoring. They take all of the fees in, any fees that are due the company that they contracted with, they return to them.
Okay. Now, they do perform that service for a company relevant to this
agreement? Yes, they do.
And what company would that be?
They have an agreement with Justice Security.
So the representative of Lydia Security told you that they are a third-party billing company for Justice Security, et cetera?
That's correct.
Now, Mr. Will, did they provide anything to back this allegation up?
They gave me both the original contract they had signed with the company, as well as a copy of several invoices and cancel checks that they had signed.
Mr. Will, if you turn to Exhibit 10, beginning on Exhibit 10, can you describe these documents to you?
They're the copies of the checks from the Lydia Security of Monitoring paid to the Order of Justice Satellite and Security.
And so, for example, on date stamp 48, we have what appears to be a check for $1,274.22. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
And what is the date on that check?
That date is
right in the middle
of the May 31, 2018.
Turn to date stamp 49. This appears to be a check for $621.13. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
What is the date on this check?
June 30, 2019.
Turn to date stamp 50. We have a check that appears to be the amount of $1,728.69. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
And what is the date on that check?
July 31, 2018.
For date stamp 51, we have a check that appears to be the amount of $604.72. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
And what is the date on that check?
August 31, 2018.
The date stamp 52, we have a check that is $36.12. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
And what is the date on that one?
September 28, 2018.
Return to date stamp 53, three, we have to check the first meeting out of $757. Is that
estimate?
What is the date on that check?
October 31, 2018.
And each of these checks was paid through Order of Justice Satellite and Security. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And what is the P.O. box that each of these checks was addressed to?
P.O. Box 598 in Tulsa.
And Mr. Will, where have you seen that P.O. box number before?
That is the same P.O. box number that was received for Justice Satellite and Security.
Now, Mr. Will, to bring this back to Mr. Johnson, so if you can turn back to Exhibit 1. So when you received from the City of Phoenix, Phoenix Police Department, a list of 201 current expired alarm systems registered for subscribers of Justice Satellite, you contacted Vicki Johnson, correct?
Yes, I did.
And pursuant to your report, again on November 6th, Mr. Johnson said you've been operating business for 6 months unregistered, is that correct?
Yes, it is.
And he additionally stated that he gets customers from word of mouth, and his people installing the alarms is only involved in servicing, is that correct?
That is correct.
And that was November 6th. Now, on December 3rd, you spoke with Mr. Johnson after you sent him notice of the investigation and a request to provide copies of alarm sales receipts, monitoring agreements, and install agreements, is that correct?
Yes, sir. Yes, it is.
How did that conversation go?
I asked Mr. Johnson if he did get that letter. He told me he did. He also, during the conversation, mentioned he had had the same cell phone number for 15 years. He stated he had not installed an alarm for over 10 years and that the company was originally his son's. His son was now in Mexico.
Mr. Will, just to take a pause, he stated he had the same cell number for 15 years, is that correct?
That's correct.
And that is the number that was provided to you by Phoenix Police, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
And that was because it was associated with Justice Security, Satellite Security, is that correct?
That's correct.
So at this point, you said he stated the company was originally his son's, but his son is now in Mexico, is that correct?
Yes, it is.
He then stated it appears the prior customers called him and he only refers them to somebody that repairs guns. Is that correct? Could you please read the sentence directly following that from the report?
Mr. Johnson, however, could not explain why he told me that he was operating the alarm business for 6 months unregistered and that he only serviced alarms when I spoke to him on November 6th.
Okay, that's a paraphrase of that. And Mr. Will, did you pursue this at all with the commission?
Yes, I did. I looked into their registrations and found that Justice Security files was registered with the Corporation Commission. However, the last annual report was filed in 2006.
And who was the statutory agent for Justice Satellite Security?
It was listed as Victor Johnson.
Now, Mr. Johnson identified for you the person that he referred alarm calls to, did he not?
Yes, he did.
And you identified that individual?
That person's name is Robert Heidi.
Mr. Heidi is a registrar. Now, you had a conversation with Mr. Heidi. What did he tell you about his relationship with Mr. Johnson?
He told me that he gets text messages from Mr. Johnson for alarm systems that need repair or work done on them. And that after the job is done, he texts Mr. Johnson back with an amount that's due, and he receives funds from Mr. Johnson to pay for the outstanding work.
Mr. Will, you by Mr. Hyde, received text messages from Mr. Donaldson. Have you seen those text messages?
Yes, I have.
And in fact, if you look at Exhibit 8, could you identify Exhibit 8 for the report?
Those are copies of Mr. Hyde's phone with the text messages.
And Mr. Will, have you a copy of the text messages from Mr. Hyde's phone?
He brought his phone with him to a meeting here at the board office, and he provided it for copies.
And Mr. Hyde identified these texts as coming from Mr. Johnson, is that correct?
Yes, he did.
Now, Mr. Will, if you look at if you identify on on date stamp 41, Mr. Will, there are a series of text messages. Can you read for the board who want to be Robert here, please?
Robert here is the phone number and address. There's a redaction of the person's phone number and address. Customer name is, that name is redacted. Robert, call me when if you can't make it. Thanks.
And directly underneath that, there is another address.
His address is, and that is also redacted.
And can you read the next text message for the board as well, please?
That text message says, Robert, alarm is not working. There's a redaction that contains an identifier of a, I believe that one is a business. A phone number, and that is also redacted. She expects you to be there Friday. Thanks. Victor.
Well, if you turn to base stamp 42, please, Mr. Gate, could you please identify these texts, or could you please read these texts before?
Starting from, looks like July, July 10th, it says, Hi, Robert, if you still want to meet today, let me know. Beyond that is a redacted account number. Is that a point name below it? That's redacted. A monetary amount of $150. It's followed by number one. And the return is a question mark. July 17th, it says, Robert, customer alarm went off, but there was no signal. Customer is redacted. Please let me know the outcome. I need a phone number or something to contact you.
And that would have been
from Mr. Hyde. From Victor, it says, sorry, phone number is, and that's redacted. Later, there's another text that same day from Victor that says, the mail guy needs 147 change to 139. Please call for location. He needs to meet me there at the building, and the building address is redacted. Same day from Victor. Robert, customer needs a sensor for his alarm. Name is redacted. Phone is redacted. Please give him a call. July 25th. Robert, here are the codes. 888-351-0398. There's a redaction. Let me know if these are the numbers you need. On July 26th, my address is redacted. On September 28th, Robert, could you please call this customer? His alarm keeps going off. He is looking for you to call today. Thanks in advance. His number is, and that number is redacted. October 2, from Victor. Customer name is, it's redacted, as well as the address and phone. Thanks. Make sure you install a sign, very important. Customer. Mr. Hyde responded, I cannot understand this guy. On October 5, Victor sends the text, call, and there is a redaction. Need you to call and make an appointment. His garage door needs more time before the alarm goes off. Phone number, and that number is redacted. On October 5th, Mr. Height responds, yeah, not going to make it. My tired group. On October 6th, Mr. Sensory Met, Darbert, this customer alarm is going off by itself. Please give her a call as soon as possible. Name is redacted. Phone number is redacted. Thanks in advance. Message from Mr. Height. Service is complete. We'll be charging you $35. On October 18th, from Victor, Robert, please give this customer a call. He informed me that there is a station on his alarm that will not set. He has to pay, he has to bypass it every night. He also said it was fixed about 3 months earlier. And according to him, it is the same station number, 13. Could you please give him a call and let him know when you can come out to fix it? Phone number is redacted. AZ customer's name is also redacted.
And the final page, base stamp 44, please.
It's a continuation of that day. Robert responded, customer not called, not being called. Issue has been fixed. You are up to $105 now. October 11th. From Robert, that customer that you just had to call me does not want to pay a service call, so I need to see if you are paying it or if they are paying it. On October 17, Victor responded, Robert, please give this customer a call. She says her alarm is going off by itself. Please schedule an appointment. Name is redacted. Her phone number is redacted. Response from Robert was, you have to start telling these customers they're in charge to come out, otherwise I'm going to have to charge you. On October 21, Victor sent a text message. Robert, please give this customer a call. His name is redacted. Address is redacted. Phone number is redacted. He needs his alarm changed to my company to let me know what the charges will be. October 28th, Victor sent Robert a text message, says, Robert, please give me a call when you get a minute. In November
20, I think that's 9. And Mr. Well, that's fine, actually. You can start a minute. So, Mr. Johnson actually had a text message where, in fact, he specifically said, please give this customer a call. His name is redacted. Address is redacted. Phone number is redacted. He needs his alarm changed to my company. Let me know what the charges will be. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Now, first of all, after you view those text messages, you, in fact, have in your report, you spoke to Mr. Johnson and he notified you on base stamp 4 that it was his son who was running the business and the phone number that you were talking to him on, he called him, was his son's. Is that correct?
Yes, he did.
Now, on December 19th, you finally received Mr. Johnson's response to the initial letter requesting all the information.
Yes, I did.
And what did that letter have to say? What did that say?
It was a written statement in which Mr. Johnson wrote that the company Justice Satellite and Security no longer exists, and that old customers call him and he directs them to an alarm business or monitoring company. States that any funds from alarm system work or monitoring goes to those companies. And then if anyone sends him any money, he directs those funds to the monitoring company.
Now, that was, of course, before you spoke with Lydia, before Mr. Johnson knew you spoke with Lydia, is that correct?
That's correct.
Now, you did speak with Mr. Johnson after you spoke with Lydia, though. Is that correct?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Now, on January 14th, you spoke to the respondent. And he told you a different story, did he?
Yes, he did.
And what was that story?
He said that the last time he communicated with the son was now 8 months ago, and he confirmed that the cell number we had been talking on was indeed his. That the P.O. box in Tyleson was his, and his son has no access to it.
And again, that is the P.O. box that Lydia was sending checks to for the third-party collection, is that correct?
That's correct.
Respondent also made a statement about the ownership of Justice Satellite Security, did you know?
Yes, he did.
And what was that?
He stated that the business was his company and that he listed it with the Corporation Commission in 2002. He said the business failed, but his laundry closed and no longer operates as a laundry business.
Okay, and that despite the fact that he was continuing to receive checks from Lydia for third-party payment, is that correct?
That's correct.
And it's not the only check, in fact. If you turn to Exhibit 11, can you identify this document for purpose?
That is a copy of a check written to Victor Johnson, or excuse me, written on the account of Victor Johnson, payable to Robert Hyde. In the bottom left, where it says the note line, it says 4, it's written service calls.
And what is the amount of this check?
$224.
And where did you receive this copy of this check, Mr. Wall?
From Mr. Hyde.
And what did Mr. Hyde say that this was for?
This was for the work he had done for Victor Johnson.
Now, as I said, earlier sessions of Victor Johnson were before he was already spoken to Lydia and had gotten copies of the checks they had sent him each month, and before they explained to you their business relationship with him, is that correct?
Correct.
So after you notified him that you had spoken to Lydia, did his story change?
Yes, he stated that he was contacted by Lydia after I had spoken with him, and informed me they had a subpoena for any records that I had sent to them. That's the first time he told me that he gets a cut, his word, from the monitoring contract.
And based upon this, at this point, did you feel that you had more than enough to proceed with this case?
Yes, I did.
And what did you do?
I prepared a consent agreement, and on January 29th, asked Mr. Johnson to meet me here down at the board office, which he did. And we sat in this very room, and myself and the licensing manager explained to Mr. Johnson what he needed to become licensed and how he became eligible, or how he became required to be under the statutes, by giving him and reading him both the definition of alarm agent and alarm business. Showed him the consent agreement that I had previously sent him. He said he understood it. He said he read it, and he signed it.
And at that point, did Mr. Johnson also change his story at all with relation to his, with regards to his relationship with Lydia Security? Did he give you any further indication of what he did?
Yes, he said that now he was a dealer rep, using his words, for Lydia Security, and he got money from them for one of the contracts.
Now, Mr. Will, you also, one other detail here is kind of interesting. You did talk to Mr. Hyde about the text correspondent directed to change the alarm his company, is that correct?
Sure.
So, what did Mr. Hyde have to say about that?
He said that when he went to the locations that Mr. Johnson sent him for alarm service, either customer came in directly or he billed Mr. Johnson. But I asked him about a text message directed to him to change the alarm to, quote, my company, unquote. Mr. Hyde stated the text message meant to change the alarm monitoring to Lydia Security.
And again, Lydia Security provides third-party payments.
Yes, it does.
Well, at this point, then, as an investigator, how consistent has Mr. Johnson been in responses to your employees?
The only consistency is that each and every one has been inconsistent.
Now, Mr. Will, you have experience with questioning people, do you know?
Yes, I do.
And where did you obtain that experience?
I worked for the Goodyear Police Department as a police officer for 20 years.
Have you questioned a reasonable number of people in your experience?
Yes, I have.
One more moment. Mr. Will, is there anything what are your thoughts at this point? Is there anything that I've not asked you that really is relevant to this question or to the allegations in regards to Mr. Johnson?
After the board meeting of February 26th, where Mr. Johnson indicated that he only did work for good friends and he was not taking any money for them, I called every person in that text message chain. Of the persons I was able to communicate with, each and every one said their only relationship with Mr. Johnson was of a business relationship and not a family one.
Specifically notified you that, in fact, with his relationship with respondent contacts him by text were on the cars repair, and Mr. Pate subsequently invoices Mr. Johnson in that case. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Thank you, Mr. Donalds. Mr. Johnson, this is your opportunity to cross-examine.
Okay, y'all. I really don't have any questions for either one of the gentlemen because everything they say is completely true. I told them that I wasn't the owner, not the owner.
Which you have?
You said Herman.
You don't have any questions for the witnesses.
No, I don't.
The state may have additional witnesses. He's indicated he has no cross-examinations.
No. Everything they
you have. You have the opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. So,
and you may ask the board members if they have questions of the witness before you excuse them.
Does the board member have any? Do the board members have any questions for the witness?
No.
We have one.
Is Victor Johnson Jr.
This is for Mr. Will, correct?
For Mr. Will.
Yeah.
Victor Johnson Jr. and Victor Johnson, are they one and the same person?
No. Mr. Will, completely different people.
Mr. Johnson indicated his son had the same, basically he was with us.
Okay.
Are there any additional witnesses from the state?
I do not have additional witnesses, Mr. Chair. I would like to point out, I believe Mr. Johnson identified himself as being in this proceeding as Victor Johnson Jr. Understanding is he has used both Victor Johnson and Victor Johnson Jr. in dealings with board staff. I would be happy to have that clarified. I
That should be on the recording, in the record, correct? Okay.
It's also on the factual allegations, where they're both confirmed.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear
you. It's also written in the factual allegations. Respondent has identified himself as both Victor Johnson and Victor Johnson Jr. in interactions with the board.
Thank you for that clarification.
Last question, sir. It was for Mr. Well. Mr. Well, have we had any contact with Mr. Johnson's son throughout the investigation? Has he shown up, called, said anything?
Not a single word. I've never been able to find out where he is.
We'd be happy to ask the witness a few questions about that if the board would like.
Mr. Rain, is that permissible?
Well, if the state is done presenting its case, then it would be the time for Mr. Johnson to testify, and then he would be subject to cross-examination.
Are we ready for that?
Certainly, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Johnson, are you ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
Okay.
Okay, all right. I have been completely honest the whole time. I've talked to the gentleman over here, and I explained to him that this is my son's company, and it's definitely my son's company. My sons have ran the company for years, and when he disappeared to Mexico, I went to T-Mobile and got a phone with his number on it, and I told him I'll try to handle whatever business he had. So I did exactly that. You know, people called me, and I just tried to answer anything that they asked me. I don't receive any money. I've never made any money from this company. It's my son's company. Right now, I guess he's receiving checks or whatever it is from the company. I know it's a very lucrative company. I guess it makes a lot of money. So all I have done was I, like the gentleman across the way, told me I would have to get a license and do all this stuff, and I did exactly what he asked me. He says, to run this company, you have to have a license. So I went out and I got applied for a license. I paid all the money for it. I did everything he asked me to do. He told me to stop doing business with customers. I completely stopped doing business with customers. Every time I got a customer, all I did was call Robert and said, look, you have a customer. And Robert took care of all, everything. So that's all I've done for the company. All I would like to do is get a license and continue the company, because I really don't know where my son is right now.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Mr. Donald, would you care to examine the witness?
Certainly, Mr. Chair. Just as to a couple of points here, Mr. Johnson. Did you... You recall on December 3rd telling the board investigator that you have had the same cell phone number for 15 years?
No, I don't recall that. I really don't. Yeah, I told him that I was talking about my son. Because if you go to T-Mobile, you'll see it's registered to him, not to me. I have a registered cell phone that I use.
Mr. Johnson, do you recall on January 14th telling the investigator that the cell phone number was yours?
And you know what? He doesn't talk to my son. The son was around. But he left. I don't remember the exact date, but my son, he remember talking.
Mr. Johnson, in that same phone call, do you recall telling the investigator that it is your P.O. box number and your son has no access to it.
No, I don't. I'm not telling you that.
Do you recall telling the investigator?
It could have been my son talking to me. I don't know. I don't remember that conversation.
Do you recall telling the board investigator that Justice Satellite Security is your company and you listed it with the Corporation Commission in 2002?
I don't remember that conversation also.
Do you remember a conversation after the board investigator spoke with Lydia Security and after he informed you that he had obtained a subpoena to get records from Lydia Security?
They called me and told me that, and that's why I called them, and I explained to them that I knew that they were sending me the records, and I told them to go ahead on and send me this. I didn't have anything to hide.
And you recall telling the investigator that you get a cut from honoring contracts?
I don't get a cut, my son gets a cut.
Johnson, do you recall writing a check to Robert Pike July 10th of 2018?
No, I did definitely write that check.
And on the bottom left of that check, it says for service calls.
Yes, I wrote that check. And that was my writing of the check. And if you look at it, it was from my own personal account. Justice Security. That was something that I felt like I owed him for doing that way.
Mr. Johnson, do you recall on November 6th of 2018, speaking with the board investigator, telling him you had been operating the alarm business for 6 months without registration?
I told him I was operating the business for my son. I started to take care of the benefits of my son was absent. But he told me I needed a license. License, and I told him I didn't have a license, and he told me how to get one, and what I needed to do, and I proceeded to doing that, just like he asked me. And I never told him once that I was not going to get a license. I never told him once that I refused to get a license, and I told him that my son was missing. And this business was there, and I would like to run it, and what would I have to do? I asked him, what I have to do to run this business. And he told me I had to have a license. He told me where to go and what I had to do. And I spent 3-4 months doing exactly what he asked me to. I was operating with him fully. I never told him no. I never told him I wasn't going to do it. I told him that my son Dennis, he was busy, what I had to do, and he told me to get a license. And I applied for a license. I went out and spent a lot of money in license and everything to make him happy, supposedly. But I guess I must have got him upset instead of making him happy.
That is the conversation where you told the investigator that you've been operating the business for about 6 months, is that correct?
Yeah, right. I was trying to continue the business because my son was absent. I didn't know where he was.
Mr. Johnson, you're familiar with the text messages that the investigator, right?
Oh, yeah. Every one of them was like she was. No deviation.
No further questions at this time?
No, and I just want to say one thing. At the time, I didn't realize that I was breaking the law. I didn't, in other words, those text messages and stuff was not, I didn't think it was running the business. I thought what I was doing was sending things in German to face the alarm. When a person called me and said, I don't know why I'm broke, I just thought that's what I had to do. But I couldn't just tell them, hey, I'm not Victor Dunham and I can't help you. I knew a guy that could help, so I could send him there. Most of the time when he went there, they paid him, but when they refused to pay him, or like the woman in the text message said, the customer refused to pay me, I went ahead and paid him because the customer said, I'm not going to pay him because you're my alarm company and I'm not going to pay you. So I went ahead and paid him. Most of the customers that he fixed on for, they just paid him. It wasn't enough to pay him anything. I just sent him to their house, man. I really thought I was just sending people, I mean, sending them a prayer and do something for prayer. I didn't know it was, I guess, rules or whatever that was. He said I was going by sending a prayer in there to, fix alarm. So, like I told him, I apologize if I was breaking the rules, but I didn't mean to break the rules. I couldn't allow a customer an alarm not to be working and not get it fixed. And if I had to pay, I could pay on my own check. And if you look at every one of the checks, clear out of my own personal account, it wasn't a business check.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. I will open this up for questions from the board. For Mr. Johnson, anybody? Dr. Angel?
Mr. Johnson, so when did you last see your son?
About 1 year ago.
1 year ago. And did you say he went to Mexico?
Somewhere in Mexico.
Okay. In the meantime, who attends to your P.O. box?
I take care of them. I mean, I have the keys to the P.O. box.
And so when the checks have gone to that P.O. box, you really get security, do you retrieve them?
I get the checks and I put it in his account.
You put them in his account?
He has access to it. I don't have, I can only put them in his account because it's made out to Justice Security. And I don't have a Justice Security account. So it goes back to the account. I'm not going to his account.
But you deposit it into his account for him?
Yes, I do put it. The checks are actually paid out to Justice Security, not to Victor Johnson.
That's it for me.
Any other questions?
I'm still confused, but does he cash those checks then? Can you tell?
I have no idea what he does.
Well, he deposits them.
So. He deposits, but...
Yeah, Mr. Johnson said he deposited them.
Did they ever come back out?
All I do is just deposit them. I don't have access to his account.
Any further questions from the board? We'll take that as none. Are there any additional witnesses by the state, from the state?
Yes.
Does the state rest?
Yes, sir.
Does the respondent wish to testify or to call any witnesses?
I just wanted to say one thing. I'll get this taken care of. board, I did offer to pay the $2,000 that put down for a penalty. And when I came to the office to pay the $2,000, they tacked on another $1,000 and another $1,000, so I just told them just to get it. But I did have that much money to pay. But I wanted to completely take care of this so it would end. But they wouldn't accept the $2,000 that was presented at the last meeting. They wanted more, and I just don't have that much money. So that's the only reason I have this isn't settled right now.
One last question, Mr. Fuchs, if it's okay?
Yeah. Please.
Mr. Johnson, have you notified your customers that you're not registered with the board at this moment? Or, I mean, do they know that anything is going on?
Well, I applied for a license and got a corporation and everything so I could take over this business. But it hasn't been granted yet. So I'm hoping to just completely take over business and my son is completely away from it. And I then run the business by myself legally instead of running that building like I've done before.
One more? Sorry. And Mr. Rain, if this is not appropriate, please let me know. But I'm looking at the Corporation Commission packet for incorporation of this firm. And it was signed by Victor Johnson, Jr., and the signature looks remarkably similar to Mr. Johnson's signature on your personal check.
Right.
On the check that you have at the end of the packet we got today to Mr. Spite or Robert Height.
Yeah,
the signature on Mr. Heist's checks looks the same as the signature on the Corporation Commission. So I was wondering if, you know, if we have a copy of your son's signature somewhere else or an ID for your son or anything we can, that you could share with us so that we know that this is not you.
That is me.
So you started Justice Security in
2002? Justice Security in August. If you look at Justice Security, and all, I'm in all the buildings. So what I wanted to do was kind of like combine the two. But I wanted to have a license. Like he said, I need a license to run the security. So,
in 2002, you filed articles of incorporation with the Corporation Commission. But you don't have access to the account?
No. That is my son.
So how come the signature looks so much like yours?
I don't.
But you don't have a copy of your son's ID or anything where we can see what his signature looks like?
No.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Johnson.
That's I have an automotive business that I've been running for years. And I just retired. So that's the only reason I took over this because I wasn't doing anything. So I decided to run my son's business while he was out of town.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Mr. Rain, is it appropriate to have the state cross-examine this or take an action?
There's been some additional testimony and evidence in the record that the state would like the opportunity to be open for as much further proceedings as you need.
Mr. Donald, is there anything that you'd like to proceed with here? Okay, Mr. Johnson, are there any additional witnesses? You have no other witnesses that you'd like to bring?
No.
Oh, do you rest on the issue? Are you satisfied you're through?
I'm resting on the issue.
Okay, thank you. This concludes the evidentiary portion of the administrative hearing. The board will now hear closing arguments. The state, do you have a closing argument for the state, Mr. Donald?
Yes, Mr. Chair, it will be brief. Mr. Johnson, as you just stated, wants to run his business legally. I don't doubt he wants to run his business legally. But that's primarily because he got caught. Mr. Johnson has been running business for quite a while, at the very least. He gives the estimate of 6 months unregistered. Realistically, it was incorporated in 2002, and we have a client contract, consumer contract from 2010. We have monthly checks being written to Mr. Johnson's company from a third-party billing system. We have a check from Mr. Johnson to the serviceman who specifically told the investigator he does service work for Mr. Johnson on these alarm customers. We have a list of 201 subscribers provided by the Phoenix Police Department who are subscribers of Justice Security. We have Mr. Johnson's varying stories about Justice Security and phone numbers and his son, who at various points has been at different locations, allegedly. We have Mr. Johnson's stories about conversations where he's speaking to the investigator and then he wasn't, maybe it was his son, even though the conversation references his son. At this point, Mr. Johnson really doesn't have any credible explanation for any of this, and he's admitted, the first thing he did was admit to the allegations, admit to the testimony of the witness, admit to the allegations. There really isn't a whole lot here that the board has to answer. What we have is a gentleman who has been serially practicing the board regulated profession without the benefit of board registration for himself and for his firm. And I would ask that the board adopt the factual allegations in the complaint, find those to be findings of fact. I would ask the board adopt the conclusions of law as enumerated in the complaint. And I would ask that the board find a penalty, an administrative penalty, to be appropriate for each one of those blatant and well-documented violations. Additionally, I would ask that the board award costs and fees incurred in bringing this matter in investigating and prosecuting this matter. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Donald. Mr. Johnson, your closing argument?
Okay, so even though I'm running my son's company, you're going to charge me for violating policies and procedures, which I never knew of until the gentleman called me and told me that I was violating procedures that I never knew. The thing that I'm upset about is that when he told me I needed a license, I immediately went out and applied for a license like he asked me. I never said I was going to apply for a license. I complied with what he asked me to do. I followed his procedures too. Paid all this money. Created another corporation, paid money for the license, fingerprints and all this, just to satisfy what he wanted. I did exactly what he wanted. And now he wants to fine me for doing what he asked me to do. I just don't understand what I did wrong. I didn't know you needed a license before I was born. I did not know that. I was told by him. As soon as he told me, I complied with everything he said. And now he wants to find me for doing exactly what he asked me to do. Right now, I have, if you look at the public agenda, I have a license there that I just applied for. It has, I guess, has to be approved. I guess it's not going to be approved because you guys don't agree with what I'm doing. So, all I got to say is I've complied with everything he asked me to do, and I don't think I did anything wrong because I did not know. That's my final statement.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Does the state wish to make a brief rebuttal argument?
Simply that the state is in no way attempting to penalize Mr. Johnson for applying for licensure. The state is pursuing violations that occurred in the past in practice when he was not licensed. Nobody has any interest in penalizing him for obtaining a license. He's been doing this for years. That is what the concern is about.
Thank you, Mr. Donald. Having heard the testimony and reviewed the evidence and arguments of the parties, the board will now discuss the case. The board can begin with general discussion or entertain the motions.
I don't understand this. So someone explain, because this thing is kind of all fogged together, so I can't remember. Okay, so we had the original board meeting. We offered him a consent agreement. He signed the consent agreement. And that did we not accept the signed consent agreement? Is that why we got to this point?
Correct.
And does anybody remember why we did not accept the signed consent agreement?
He actually stated to you he didn't agree that he signed the consent agreement and that he didn't agree with anything in the consent agreement. And he didn't feel that the fine in the consent agreement.
I agree with the consent agreement, and I told him I would pay it. He said that the board didn't agree with it. That's what I was saying. So I had money, I was going to pay it, just get rid of it. And they said that the board...
Mr. Chair,
yes, sir.
The evidentiary portion of the case, typically we would cut out for testimony, but in addition, what you're really discussing are settlement discussions that have occurred in the past, which weren't part of the evidentiary portion of the hearing, and generally would be inadmissible. So I would just direct you to, you don't have a consent agreement, that's all the fact that matters. And to dive into those considerations.
Thank you, Mr. Rain.
Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt the factual allegations of the complaint and notice of hearing as findings of fact.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any Nay. Opposed? One opposed.
Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt the alleged violations of law in the complaint and notice of hearing as conclusions of law.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Aye. Nay.
And one opposed.
Now we need to figure out the appropriate
penalty.
Was the original consent agreement appropriate?
I don't believe so. I mean, I think this is it's not a one-time thing. It's not I just didn't know I was registered. I think it's been going on for a long time, and I don't think we've gotten honest answers from Mr. Johnson throughout the process. So I have no reason to believe that by signing a consent agreement, he's going to stop his practice at this point. I guess that's off the table now. We're looking to a penalty, but I think the penalty should be commensurate with what he's done over the last few years. I mean, you get checks, an average of $100 or $1,000 a month that he's collecting from people. It doesn't sound like he's done anything to notify or to change the way he's operating the business recently.
What would you suggest as an appropriate penalty?
This packet had a crazy amount, didn't it?
Yeah.
I think it was 15 violations that were established. I mean, I think 15. Which I think is too much. If we were to do the maximum for each allegation. But I certainly think that a penalty in the $5,000 to $10,000 range would be appropriate, in my mind.
It helps the board deliberation, your statute 32-106-02 states that in determining the amount of the civil penalty that the board imposes, it shall consider and list a number of factors. The seriousness of the violation, the economic benefit to the violator, the violator's history of violations, and any other considerations that you deem appropriate. So it does, your statute is required that you consider those elements.
I'd be okay with 5,000 for sure.
I don't think our intent is not to drive Mr. Johnson Jr. or Johnson bankrupt, but that he understands the seriousness of what he's done. I'm most troubled by the fact that, you know, his son is nowhere to be seen, have no evidence of him or his participation. Mr. Johnson, you've signed papers 2 months ago with the Corporation Commission to put the firm under your name. I don't know how you can do that if you're not a statutory agent and it's your son. You signed as Junior, Victor Johnson Jr., on that as well. So I'm troubled that you don't understand how serious this is. So I think that's why we need a significant penalty.
Sir, the microphone's closed right now. We're in discussion. Right. I'm sorry.
So let's get the discussion started then. I'll move that we issue an order imposing a $5,000 penalty. I would also include an assurance of discontinuance because he's admitted to continuing pending his application. And award attorney's fees and costs related to this hearing.
An investigative cost as well? I mean, you mean everything or just...
Investigative costs and attorney's fees and costs.
Board Member Everett, would you make that as both respondents jointly separately? Both responsible for $5,000 or a separate penalty?
It's in addition to total.
Yeah, no, I think it would be... Just give me 1 second. I'll turn the rain. Oops. Yes, jointly and separately.
Is there a time limit?
Typically, there wouldn't be a. It's due immediately.
Yeah.
There's a delay before the order becomes effective, while the respondents have the opportunity to request a rehearing, 35 days essentially, before it will become effective.
Is that a motion?
Yes.
Okay, I'll second the motion. And I'd like to ask staff, if the motion were to be passed, would we notify his customers of the action?
We don't have a list of all the customers, as far as I'm aware.
Well, PD provides us a list.
I don't know what contact information is on that. We typically don't.
I think ultimately our goal is to protect the public. We really don't gain much if he continues to practice the same way. So I would put it on us to notify. I mean, we can send a letter. If they ignore it or don't get it, it's not our fault. But I think we should try to reach the customer.
Mr. Will,
I think if we talk to Linear Security, that would handle that whole end of it.
Okay.
As far as the other ones. Phoenix only gave us that list of Phoenix. We don't know about how else we have it.
Okay, at least the ones we know.
And will the order be finally posted publicly on the website?
Assuming it passes.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, I will call for the question. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Nay.
Nay. Two opposed?
Two.
One.
Who's the other?
Me.
Oh, okay.
Carmen? I give an aye.
And that was an aye from the member on the phone. Is there any further business to discuss here on the matter? Okay, this concludes the formal hearing. The board's decision will be reduced to a written order and served on the parties. The parties will have further appeal rights that will be explained in the board's order. This concludes the matter. Thank you all for attending today.
Mr. Chair, can I move for a break?
Yes, I was going to do that, but we will go to a 15-minute break. I've got 11:40, unless anybody wants to go to noon. Should we go to noon?
No.
Okay.
We'll go to 11:42.
11:50, yeah.
11?
You can go to noon. That's when I need to get on my flight. But if not, I will sign off now.
Okay. We can relieve you, Carmen. We've got a break.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you. Return from recess here. I've got 11:55. I believe that Carmen dropped off the phone there.
Yeah, she's gone.
Okay. So our next order of business, we're going to jump to 7A, which is a licensing matter for Mr. Johnson. Mr. Johnson, would you care to make yourself present here at the table and state your name for the record? Thank you, Mr. Johnson. In front of us, we have an application number 190766 for alarm agent registration and application, 190765 for controlling person registration. The question in front of us is whether to grant or deny registration of licensure. So I'll open it up for board discussion. Anyone?
Mr. Foose, and Mr. Johnson has been subject of discipline by this board, and I think that during that disciplinary hearing, it was clear to me that he doesn't have the qualities that it requires, the moral character required to be an alarm agent. Also note that on his application, he answered that he's never been subject of professional disciplinary action or had pending actions against him, which he did at the time with us when he filed the application. So I would move that we deny the application for licensure.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second that, Chair.
Okay, I'll open it up for discussion.
Okay, here's my issue with this. You know, this gentleman comes in here, finds out he needs to be licensed. We tell him he needs to be licensed. He understands he needs to be licensed. He goes through all the application to become licensed. I mean, you know, he obviously knew that he wasn't licensed. He needed to be licensed, and he went through the effort of becoming licensed, which is what we want as a board, so we have a licensed individual that's out there practicing. So that's all I got to say about that.
Well, I would agree with Mr. Madison. The applicant did make efforts to comply when it was brought to his attention that he wasn't in compliance. So we've all heard the testimony from today, but in this matter, he did make an application. So.
And I agree with that, but I think you're putting the interest of the applicant in front of the interest of the public. I mean, the applicant still has not been sincere to the board, has not understood the gravity of what he's done, so I don't think he can responsibly practice. Yes, we want people to practice, but we want people who can practice while harming the public. I don't think he can. I'd much rather have him not be licensed and make sure people understand he's not qualified to do it than basically rubber stamp that he's a good alarm agent and then continue to do stuff that he should be doing, you know, or run a business the way he's responded to our hearing today. So I still think we shouldn't grant.
Any further discussion?
Yeah, Charlie, the second, I think based on the testimony prior to, there's enough ambiguity on his part that he'll be tough to regulate.
Yeah, we wouldn't know if it was him or his son. The application is Victor Johnson, not Victor Johnson Jr. Also. It changes every day.
Anyone else?
If he falls behind in his payments in the previous case, will that impact his registration? Or is that separate completely?
No, but then a case could be brought against him for that as a registrant.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But again, if I had to pick lesser of two evils, I'd rather not collect on the penalty than have someone irresponsible practicing.
Well, I agree there was some wishy-washiness there, but we also have an application and we have a valid background verification, so we have those things in front of us.
We do.
Well, it seems to me from the previous work that his alarm business, there's nothing wrong with it other than ownership and registration, but it sounds like he was doing it correctly. He's bringing the right people in to do the job. So giving him registration, I don't know how that would impact his clients in terms of him not being qualified. It's not that he's qualified to do this type of work. The question is, he made this check when he was under investigation. He's got that other issue on in front of him. If somebody else checked, no, we knew he did something, he was under discipline, then we really looked at that pretty tightly. Right now, it's like 50-50.
I just want to remind the board that it's up to the applicant to demonstrate not only that they're capable and qualified, but that they have the good moral character to practice safely.
Yeah, that's my concern. If he's been changing his story with us all the time, how can we trust him to be, you know, truthful and honest with his customers?
Anybody else?
I agree with Alejandro.
Okay, if we have no more discussion, I'll call for the question. All in favor of denying?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Nay.
How many nays do we have?
Nay.
Four.
Motion fails.
The motion fails, so that was for a denial. Is it appropriate to for somebody to offer a motion to grant, I guess? Or is there an implication there?
No, I'll make a motion to grant licensure to Mr. Johnson, application 190765.
We We have a second.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion?
There was a second application as well, 190766.
Oh, was that?
Yeah, application for alarm agent was 766. Application for controlling person was 765. So, okay.
So added to my motion.
So your motion would be to accept or approve both applications.
Yes.
So for those who are Mr. Madison and Mr. Noel, if you could explain why you think this applicant should be granted, I would appreciate that.
I think he should be granted because he wasn't registered. We asked him to be registered. He's filled out the paperwork. He's has his background check. He's had everything else done. So that's for the, you know, it's just the check mark of the not under investigation. I can see that being, in this case, an oversight. And the good moral character, I would rather have him as a registrant that could be regulated than just out there doing stuff on his own.
Can I just have a curious question?
Hey, just one question for the board. On pages, with the application, there are two different driver's licenses provided for Mr. Johnson. It's just a point, I just wasn't quite sure from a legal standpoint. There's one with the main address and one with the PO box.
One's was expired.
It's provided and expired, so we require that. Yes. An update and expired.
So we're discounting that a week after the board meeting, he checked that he didn't have any pending cases against him. Mr. Johnson, would you care to explain why you didn't check the box that you had to?
Once again, my son owns the company. You don't believe me.
What does that have to do with you filing an application? Did you file this application or was it your son?
I filed an application.
Okay, so why did you say you didn't have a case against you with the board?
So I filed an application so I could take over the company. I was helping my son. I was not running the company. I was, yes.
Did you know there was a case against you after you appeared at the board on February 26th?
The case hasn't started.
Really? Okay. I can't believe you can't give a straight answer to anything and we're going to register you.
Right. The case hasn't started. And once again, I was asked to get a license and I applied.
You guys know I respect you all, but I can't believe that just because we tell somebody to go get a license, we grant licenses.
What's your son's name?
My son's name is Victor Johnson. My name is Victor Johnson Jr. I know you don't believe me. I wish I could go to the car. I can show you a license with his name on it, his picture, everything.
You could do that?
I could bring.
You've had 6 months.
What?
How come you haven't done that yet?
Because no one ever had. I was trying to. Complete and eliminate. I was going to pay $2,300 that you asked me to pay the last time. But they added another $1,000 to it, and then he added another $1,000 to it, and he kept going. I said, look, I'm just.
I
agree with what you said. That's fine. That fine was fair, and I was fair. But that was $5,000.
Mr. Johnson, how long have you been running this company? You say you don't run it, you run it for your, you're helping your son, but how long has your son been out of the picture?
About 8 months.
So he was running it up to 8 months ago.
I didn't know anything about it. The security business. I shouldn't say anything about that. I didn't know what to do. All I knew was I didn't tell Robert what to do. I didn't work on the farm. I didn't do anything. If anybody called me, I called Robert. And that's all I did. And honestly, I explained to the investigator exactly who I was and why I was doing it. And for some reason, he thought I was lying to him. I never told him one lie. But all I want to do is continue the business, and that's why I filed it. Well, I got my fingerprints, I got everything, I'm background check. I've never been in jail, I'm 71 years old, so I'm not planning on doing anything, I'm just speaking. All I'm on the horizon, so I continue my son's company as it was. I'm not lying to you once.
I would love to grant contingent of him getting us a letter from his son and a copy of his driver's license.
I could bring his driver's license and everything.
I was on the fence and I fell back over.
What?
The more he talks.
So, I kind of agree with you. Okay, if we didn't grant him alarm agent, which is a person that goes in and installs alarms, sells and installs alarms, but could be granted as a controlling person who basically coordinates alarm agents, which is kind of what he's been doing with the other guy. Am I correct in the interpretation of that?
Kind of, yes. Obviously, a controlling person is really attached to the business, and this board relies upon controlling persons to be the conduit between the board and the business, and they have to sign off on the applications for that alarm agent submit to us. So he'd be like a principal in the firm.
Be a reference.
Right, but yeah. he wouldn't be out, or he wouldn't be registered to go out to someone's house and install an alarm or sell an alarm.
Can I ask Mr. Johnson a question? What does a license do? What do you need to have a license
to perform the alarm business? I was told about this.
We don't know now what the law is. All of that pertains to a license to be a alarm agent for a Troy person. You don't know what they are?
I've read.
I'm going to vote against them. We can change
my vote. But what are they?
Let's keep talking.
What are they? What do you need a license to do? Do you need a license to sell? If you had a license,
I was told that's what you need a license for.
This is a lot of business. But this alarm agent and the other one is controlling person. Person who does not own a business does not include an alarm agent. So you don't have to be an alarm agent to be a controlling person.
Let's focus here.
Okay. My concern is Mr. Johnson is going to get a license and he doesn't know what that means. He doesn't know what allows him to do, what it doesn't allow him to do. He's been before the board for a hearing, he's been under investigation, but he still doesn't understand.
Mr. Chair, if I may, I'd like to withdraw my second to this motion.
Okay. The second for the motion has been withdrawn. Is the motion withdrawn?
Sure. Withdraw the motion.
Is there a new motion that we'd like to
Nope, all 100, that chance I had a chance.
Bad luck already. Everyone I've made is built to him.
I'm not going to remake your motion. That'll look bad.
Okay, I'll move that we deny the application. Both applications.
I'll second that, Chair.
We have a motion and a second. We've had plenty of discussion. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Nay.
We have one opposed. Motion passes. Thank you, Mr. Johnson.
Okay, so I'm not denying. I like